It's the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts on the biggest stories.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Sam Ekstrom. It's Sage Rosenfels. It's your favorite podcast back for a mini camp edition. I'm on Twitter at Sam Ekstrom. Sage is on Twitter at Sage Rosenfels 18. Let's get right to it, Sage. We're at mini camp the last couple days, and the final practice is today with about a 5 or 6 week break until they report back for training camp, the official camp. When you were playing, what kind of message was given on the final day of minicamp? Because I'm sure it's got to be something along the lines of, don't get in trouble the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, this is one of those times of the year when head coaches, when general managers, they get worried that their players are in the heart of the summer, when there's a lot of things going on around the country, a lot of festivals, a lot of parties, 4th of July, that they get this, 5 or 6 week break until training camp starts. And so, a lot of players travel all over the world during this time. And this is a time where players, you can get in trouble a little bit. So they also always, make sure you have a good workout regimen. They send you home with a workout regimen always. But, obviously a lot of guys have private trainers and even go to, different locations and train for a lot of July to truly get ready, and prepared for the 2018 season.
Well, let's segue into a couple of Vikings players that did get in trouble. So they had a linebacker, Kentrell Brothers, who got suspended for PEDs for 4 games. He's probably going to be a reserve on the 53-man roster. And then you've got Caleb Jones. He was a fringe wide receiver, and he got pinned for PEDs as well in April. So a couple of Vikings both getting suspended, and I talked to them both yesterday. They both said, it was a mistake. I didn't know that substance was in that supplement, what have you. Do you buy those excuses? Do you think it's always unintentional, or do you think that's just a convenient excuse?
Well, it does seem to be the go-to answer that, they're either using a substance that wasn't supposed to have an illegal substance in it, and then they got, they got busted for that, so then sort of blaming the supplement company. Or they blame themselves by saying they didn't realize that some sort of illegal substance was in the supplements they were taking. It is the go-to. I'm not going to sit here and call somebody a liar. I refuse to do that. I don't know all the information. You don't know what's in somebody's heart. Mm-hmm. I know this for myself and for a lot of other guys. I mean, I think protein shakes are about as far as I went as far as taking supplements to get ready to, for working out and to get in shape or whatever. So, we definitely are in that age where guys are looking for any sort of advantage, whether to make the team or to sort of take that next step from a good player to become a great player. And a lot of guys, get into the world of illegal supplements and whatever edge they can get. And I think a lot of times it is players just don't realize what they're taking. And a lot of them think that they have some sort of, magic formula that they probably think is legal.
Right. It's all about who you're listening to, right? It's about, are you listening to your trainers, your coaches who have the approved methods, or are you listening to your buddy who, went on vacation and heard about this really cool thing and he gives it to you to try? That's when I think you have to put your antenna up. So one of the other big talking points at minicamp has been chemistry. We've got the new quarterback. We've got the new offensive coordinator. How are they working together? How are they working with their teammates? How are they working with the rest of the offense, the rest of the coaches, head coach Mike Zimmer? There's a lot of fusion going on between these two prominent new faces and their surroundings. So when you were a quarterback, how did you create chemistry with the coaches and players around you? What was that process like?
Well, I think number one, and I know this about Kirk Cousins, this is something that I'm really interested to see during training camp, during these preseason games. I just know that Kirk Cousins likes things done a certain way. He has a process that got him to being the guy who's making $28 million a year guaranteed. He wants his coordinator, and it really does start with the coordinator or whoever is installing these pass plays, He needs things to be very, very precise. He is a quarterback that doesn't have a huge arm, that doesn't have all the athletic ability in the world, is not somebody who goes out there and just sort of makes it happen. He's a guy that's all about preparation, execution. His accuracy comes from the wide receiver's accuracy, you know, on the route. So he needs to have the coordinator to make sure that the wide receivers, the tight ends, the backs are exactly where they're supposed to be at all times, and that's how Kirk Cousins plays good football. So that's what I'm interested to see is you know, does DeFilippo have that type of – is he that type of coordinator? You know, North Turner was not as precise with some of the things that he did. As a coordinator, he always thought that players sort of, you know, go out there and you have routes for them, you have plays for them, but the players make plays. Kirk Cousins is sort of the opposite of that. He wants things to be, you know, down to the wire or down to the everything with a fine tooth comb, everything absolutely perfect, all the, you know, T's crossed, all the I's dotted. And in that type of offense, he does very, very well. So I think this time of year, he's seen, you know, how DeFilippo installs the offense, installs the plays. You know, there's plays that are in the playbook, and then actually how are they taught? How are they installed? And then how does Kirk Cousins execute those plays? And so I think this is the type of year where Kirk Cousins has sort of figured out probably now, you know, what type of offense is this? What is his role going to be in it? Are there plays that he liked from the sort of Shanahan, Sean McVay, you know, Jay Gruden years in Washington that are going to be carried over? Are they designed the same? Are they, you know, talked about in the same way? This is that time of year, I think, where you know, the quarterbacks and Kirk Cousins are sort of trying to figure out or are figuring out, you know, exactly what type of offense this is.
And there was a moment yesterday that Cousins talked about where he wanted Adam Thielen to get out of his break in a certain way, and Thielen did it a different way. And basically, they just had a really good conversation after the session about how Thielen comes out of his breaks, what Cousins prefers, what Thielen prefers, and coming to an agreement about how a certain play would be run. And that's the kind of detail that Kirk Cousins is talking about. And he had a really good analogy. He said that the off-season program has been like drinking through a fire hose for him. He's trying to take in a lot. He's got new players around him and a new offense to run. And now the next 6 weeks will be him essentially going back over his notes and dotting those I's and crossing those T's and making sure he's squared away. I'm sure taking a lot of mental reps. Is that something that makes sense to you? You go back and you sort of think through everything that you've studied and digested over a period of time?
Yeah, and I think that's the whole thing is that, you know, there's plays that are designed, and then there's actually how the way, you know, the coordinator teaches them, and then there's actually that last step, which is how do the players actually run those routes? You know, Cousins probably has certain ways and certain throws, so he can anticipate that are run a certain way. Maybe they roll out of the break. And then there's other aspects where guys more break down, put on a little move, try to get a little more separation, and then come out of the break. Well, that's, you know, that's a full, you know, half or even quarter second. That's the difference between completing balls on third down and not. And there's such a small room for error in the NFL. You have to be on the same page. So that's the stuff that I love is where, you know, give Cousins that, you know, sort of that power to work with those wide receivers to try to get on the same page so they all run routes the way he wants them, but at least consistently so he can anticipate and be accurate and get first downs.
Now, there was a sequence yesterday where we saw a little bit of blemish on Kirk Cousins, but I think I want to pump the brakes on it, and maybe you can help me with that. So they were doing a red zone third down passing session, right? So it's already third down in the scenario, and they have to get a touchdown. First play, throws an interception to the safety, Jayron Kearse, on a little fade to the left side. Then I think it was a post route. He threw an interception to Anthony Barr, who ducked under the route and stepped in front for the pick. Then there was a play at the goal line where Adam Thielen would have had a score, but he dropped it. Then there was a play that was tipped at the line of scrimmage. It was going very poorly for the offense in the scenario. Now, to me, it feels like when you're in practice, maybe you feel a little more emboldened to take a chance. You know, it's a passing drill. You want to see what you can do, what your receivers have. So you're probably going to make some throws in practice that you might not make entirely in a game in September. This is June. Is this a time when you can kind of let things loose and afford to make a couple of those mistakes?
Well, if you look back at those mistakes, it looks like the first one was a fade ball that was probably 50-50, and maybe it was a bad route or maybe it was a bad throw, but either way, the defense came down with it, so I'm not sure how much you can really blame the quarterback on that one. Obviously, throwing the ball in the linebacker intercepts it, that's on the quarterback. You know, every single time that's on the quarterback. So, yeah, there's definitely issues in the summertime. You do want to be more aggressive. You're not wearing pads. You're just wearing helmets. You want to throw the ball. You can check the ball down, you know, as much as you want and have a 95% completion percentage. But at the end of the day, you want to try to make those throws now and be a little riskier now. And then once the season starts, once you get into game planning, then probably play a little closer to the vest. But this is the time right now to take a few more shots, be a little bit more aggressive, because you never really know if the receiver makes that play, the DB breaks on the play, all those things. When you throw the ball down the field, you'll never know, you know, what the result is if you're constantly chucking the ball down to the running backs and taking 3 and 4 yard gains. So, yeah, I would definitely say summertime, even more than training camp, at the time to be more aggressive from the quarterback position.
I'd say the most entertaining thing we saw yesterday was the second round pick, the tackle, Brian O'Neill, was catching passes with the tight ends during individual drills. Do you think this is setting up for like a trick play in week 14 where he checks in as a tackle eligible and fools the defense?
Well, possibly. You know, the Eagles did do a few of those things. They'd come in these sort of unbalanced lines or they'd split, you know, a couple linemen out to the right and a couple linemen out to the left, and you'd have a tackle who has checked in as an eligible receiver as a tight end. It really ran right down the middle. I think they ran a play like that a year or two ago. So, Philadelphia has been one of these teams that has been very creative in the way they've used players. And, you know, it could also be a goal line situation where, you know, you have that extra tight end who's released the tackle in those goal line situations. And, you know, you throw him a corner route or you do some sort of play action. He ends up coming wide open because no one's expecting him to catch the football. So it is always it always is to your advantage if you can find tackles who can occasionally go out and catch a ball. We had a guy in Houston, Ephraim Salam, was that player, very athletic guy, high school basketball player. We put him in goal line situations, occasionally throwing the ball in practice. Never actually happened in a game, though.
And O'Neill is a former tight end. He actually added about 50 pounds in college and became a tackle. So he's got athleticism. He's got like 4.8 speed, which is insane. And he actually scored 2 touchdowns for Pittsburgh as a tackle on trick plays. So this isn't something totally foreign to him. Now, this is looking way, 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 way ahead. But with DeFilippo on the Vikings, when they play Philadelphia, is that advantage Vikings or is that advantage Eagles or is it pretty much dead even when you've got one team that's super familiar and you've got DeFilippo who's super familiar with what they're going to do? Is that an advantage for anybody?
I don't think there's really an advantage there. I think that both of the Eagles coaches and players and they will sort of have an idea what DeFilippo's doing, but you know, everyone's constantly changing up their game plans and going for new looks and things like that. So no, I think that's, I've always thought that's sort of overrated when, you know, two old coaches who used to work together are playing each other. I don't think there's generally not really an advantage either way unless one coach is just sort of an idiot and only sort of survived because of the other coach, which doesn't happen very often.
Doesn't change any of the code words or the audibles. I mean, that's probably the...
Yeah, maybe that's it. Or that's one of those things where sometimes coordinators, when they leave their former job or they switch teams, they already wanted to sort of change some of their signals and some of their verbiage and code words, so that stuff's all being changed a little bit here and there. And I would say during the week both teams will probably change up a few of the hand signals, a few of the code words. When I was playing for the Texans, we had a preseason game. We're playing against the Denver Broncos, first or second preseason game of the year. And, you know, this is Kubiak going back to his old stomping grounds where he was at there for 12 years. So we actually had, you know, Dragon was the slant-flat combination in the West Coast offense. You audible to it a lot. There was too many guys in the box. So when we audible to it in that game, it automatically meant with a sluggo. So it wasn't a slant. It was actually a slant and go. We obviously didn't signal sluggo. We signaled the slant and actually ended up being a touchdown for us. So there's definitely advantages you could try to take, but both teams sort of have that, so I don't think either team has really an advantage either way.
I hear you. Sage, great insights as usual. I'm going to hustle off to mini camp today. You know, sometimes they cut these practices short and sometimes they cancel them outright. So we'll see if maybe there's a surprise waiting for the players. Maybe practice is abbreviated or abridged in some way today as they will disperse and then reconvene here in late July. Sage, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good. Enjoy camp tonight.
He's Sage Rosenfels, the former quarterback, at Sage Rosenfels 18. I'm on Twitter, at Sam Ekstrom. Also on Instagram, at Sam Ekstrom NFL, doing some videos for minicamp on there. Check us out, LockedOnVikings.com. Subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody.